traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Good afternoon, equestrians. This is Scott Miller coming to you live from Delray Beach, Florida. Sunny, rainy, warm Delray Beach, Florida. And it's warm everywhere. And speaking of being warm, guess what happened in the horse business this week and today in particular? Extreme heat forces numerous racing cancellations. You know, the wind, the weather, everything all year long has been up and down. Woodbine and Laurel Park, Ellis Park, Colonial Downs, and Belterra have announced that they are postponing racing due to the weather. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, over the weekend. Some of the tracks are scheduling for Monday and Tuesday racing. And, depends on the weather. It just depends on the weather. But when you have the heat that we have, throughout the country and up and down the East Coast and the weather, that type of thing, we've got to think of the safety of the horses and the people that are involved. And a few years back, we had a situation to where the heat was getting to an extreme point it was as bad as it was now. And you couldn't even transport the horses. Not even at nighttime, the temperatures were still pretty high, and, it was rough on them. So that's what it's all about, is the safety of the horses and the people that are involved in it. And, we hope everybody, is taking the precautions and drinking plenty of water, to take care of themselves, and the horses. So, that's what we're looking at this weekend. Cancellations, they will be rescheduled. On the card, but it's Woodbine, Laurel Park, Ellis Park, Colonial Downs, and Belterra will be canceling racing for this weekend. So, I just want to tell you that safety is the first thing on our minds. And speaking of safety, we've got a lot of good things going on throughout the country with the new HISA programming. They're adjusting and they're modifying their programs to accommodate, the industry. It's a slow walk of the rules and regulations, but it's a necessary one. It's a necessary one. We want to give a good product to the racing industry. We want to make sure that the horses are safe and the people are safe and everybody's going by the rules and everything. And it's kind of hard to get the rules and regulations, all on the same page. The same rules and regulations throughout the country and every state makes it very difficult, to do. And I'll tell you how important the horse industry is to us, like we were talking about last week. For example, the University of Kentucky survey finds that 31,000 equine enterprises in the state of Kentucky alone. When you start looking at, wherever they, they're at, you're talking about all breeds of horses. You're looking at 210,000 equine people reside in the state of Kentucky, 31,000 different operations, over 900,000 acres in the state of Kentucky alone. The 2022 Kentucky Equine Survey, which looks at all breeds as well as donkeys and mules. And I got a couple of those mules racing, I think, in my barn. Estimates that the total value of the state equine related assets is $27.7 billion. And that's an estimated equine related sales and income for the equine operations in the state of Kentucky also reached $2.1 billion. Thoroughbreds are listed as a majority breed by number, 48,500, followed by 35,000 quarter horses. It's just amazing what they have. They're the organizations that are involved with all these horses. They want to improve equine health care, educate, inform state and local policymakers, inform workforce development, aid in supporting proposals for business ventures and grants and identify emerging markets. It's a thing that every state wants to do, needs to do. It's very important to our economy. Very, very important to our economy. I'm going to switch over here to the Florida horse industry that has done pretty much the same thing. Florida is the home to nearly every breed of horse. As a result, the equine industry supports a wide variety of activities, including breeding, training, racing, polo, rodeo, competitive show horses, like dressage, cross-country, show jumping, and trail and pleasure riding. And it's very important to us here. And at all levels, horse lovers are drawn to Florida year-round, moderate climate, mineral-rich water, soil, and outstanding facilities and strong support of the industry. And, you know, that's one good thing about here in Florida. You know, we do have good weather year-round. We have a tremendous amount of facilities here. One of them is the World Equestrian Center in Ocala. It's a huge facility. They've got everything that you can imagine there to see and know about the horses. You got the Winter Equestrian Festival here in West Palm Beach. You've got horse racing in Gulfstream Park in Miami, Tampa Bay. It's just unbelievable, you know, the horse things that you can do down here. Everything is horse related. The economic impact of the horse industry, including industry suppliers, generates an annual income of $6.8 billion as an economic impact on the gross domestic product of Florida, total employment figures add up to about 244,000 jobs. It's just amazing, you know, that the jobs that these create. And all these 244,000 jobs, you're buying, you know, food at the Publix, Winn-Dixie. You know, they're supporting our gas stations, our grocery stores, you name it, they're doing it. That's a lot of people that's supporting our economy here. With a horse population over 385,000 horses, Florida ranks as the third largest equine state in the United States. Horse ownership, equine associations, and profit-making organizations, plus tourism spending by riders and spectators combined with $11.7 billion annually to each economy here. The Ocala breeder sales recorded over $1 billion in thoroughbred horse sales from 2010 to 2018. So over an eight-year period, you know, you're looking at $1 billion just in horse sales alone. You know, it's just phenomenal what they do there. Our agricultural business climate here in Florida, there's no personal state income tax, no individual capital gains tax, no tax on stallion seasons. Horses are exempt from sales tax if purchased from the original owner. Feed and animal health products, along with other specific items, are also exempt from the state sales tax. Florida Greenbelt exemption provides property tax breaks for the horse owners. Certain farm equipment and also it will be exempt from sales tax. Receive special treatment. Moderate climate allows for year-round farming, training, and racing and showing. Florida ranks as a national leader in veterinarian and equine research. Over 70,000 acres of land in Florida is used for horse-related purposes. Limestone-rich soil and spring-fed aquifers contribute to the growth of strong, healthy horses. And having said that, there's only three places in the world that you can take the water and the land is pretty much the same. One is Lexington, Kentucky, Florida, and Chantel, France. The limestone is unbelievable, and they create some of the best growing environments for and raising horses in there. The first horse farm in Florida was established in Ocala in the 1930s. In the 1950s, a thoroughbred horse named Needles became the first Triple Crown winner. You know, and it's just, it just goes to show you that there's a lot of things that, are here. We've got a nice Florida horse park here that they're really putting a lot of money into and getting, you know, people to come out and visit. And they have that. You know, on the lines of the Kentucky Horse Park, the same programs, showing horses, you know, experimenting with new types of businesses there. It's everything, you know, there in, the horse park. You know, I was really surprised when I went up there. It's a multi-service facility with RV facility, a spacious covered arena, 12 barns, 4 all-weather outdoor riding arenas, cross-country course, and good facilities all the way around. It's just really nice there. You know, I like it. Florida is the home to over 600 thoroughbred horse farms and training centers. Over 1,300 thoroughbred owners, breeders, and trainers live there. There's approximately 100,000 thoroughbreds in Florida. One out of every 4 horses are thoroughbreds. More than 75% are located in Ocala, Florida. The breeders and owners alone have contributed to multi-billion dollar investments in Florida. Florida produced one Triple Crown winner, 6 Kentucky Derby winners, 7 Preakness winners, 6 Belmont winners, 52 national champions, and 167 equine millionaires. So that says a lot, you know, here, just in the thoroughbred end. The quarter horse breed has become the most famous horse breed in North America. Florida was the 3rd largest quarter horse population in the country, sanctions 22 disciplines in an annual quarter horse event, generating a large economic and recreational impact. Events including cutting, reining, barrel racing, and a number of roping events. Those roping events are really good. Those roping events are really good. And then, unfortunately, you know, you get to hear a fallen Santa Brand industry. It's kind of gone by the wayside here. They closed up Pompano Park this year, so there's no more harness racing in the state. We do have some breeding farms. There's 50 breeding farms, training facilities designated exclusively for standard bred racing. South Florida to Bell, Florida, and North Florida. Pompano, like I said, Park was just recently closed. And that was there since 1964. And that was the tough thing about seeing that go. It was very difficult. Florida Cracker Horse is a rare breed of horse brought to Florida by the Spanish in the 1500s. The settlement screw, the horses known for their speed and agility, were used primarily for herding cattle. The genetic heritage of the Florida Cracker Horse is similar to the Pasofino, the Mustang, and other breeds originally introduced by the Spanish into Cuba, the Caribbean islands, and South America. Florida farmers nicknamed them the Cracker Horses because of the sound of their cow whips they used to drive cattle with. In the 1930s, ranchers and cowmen turned to the larger and stronger quarter horse. As a result, the Cracker Horse survival faced dire extinction. Thanks to the work of the Florida family farmers and members of the Florida Cracker Association, who continue to breed the Florida horse for their own use, the breed survived. Although still rare, there are over 1,000 cracker horses in the state of Florida. So, you know, it's just supposed to tell you everybody is trying to make the horse in their state, in their area, you know, a place of employment, work, tradition, you know, history. It's just amazing. And I have a hard time explaining to a lot of people, because I'm not a real professional, you know, in what I'm doing here now, but I've got a lot of knowledge. And that knowledge is the fact that the horse industry to the United States, from the United States as a whole, to each individual state, to each local community, the horse has an impact on our economy. And it's very important. It's very important to, you know, support and have these shows and these races and you know, these farms going, because it supplies jobs, you know, here. Just to give you an example, the horse industry in the United States contributes $122 billion annually to the U.S. economy. Now, the U.S. horse industry employs 1.74 million people. 1.74 million people in the United States work in the horse industry. There's 7.25 million horses in the U.S. Texas is the largest horse population per state. 1.6 million households in the U.S. own horses. Now, that, you can think about that. 1,600,000 people in the United States own horses. 60% of the equestrians work in a managerial position. You know, that says a lot when you're talking about all these people. You know, you're talking about farm managers, you know, office help. You know, it's just amazing how they did it. The horse industry, like I said, is $122 billion annually in the U.S. economy. The direct contribution to GDP is $50 billion. Total employment impact is 1,744,000 people. Direct employment impact is 988,000 people. The number of horses is now over 7.2 million in the United States. So when we start looking at the different states that we have here, here's a quick overview of the horse industry's impact on the GDP. The highest ranked one is Kentucky. It's just phenomenal what they have there. They've got 238,000 horses in Kentucky. Oklahoma is ranked number two. They've got 252,000 in their state. But they're in a GDP and $178 million, where Kentucky is $195. Then we have Florida. We have New York is the lowest, California and Illinois. So it just goes to show you that a lot of people that are in the horse business, you know, could be working right there. You know, you never can tell. You might have somebody that you work with or your neighbor that's, you know, part of the horse business. You know, that's one of the things that we were looking at. And then we come out and we look at, just for example, in the horse business, you know, there's volunteers that work in volunteer in horse-related programs, 1,370,000 people. Total employment is 1,744,000 people. Direct employment is 988, with direct wages. Direct wages are $38 billion, just in wages coming out to the, you know, the people in the horse industry. And that's one thing that, you know, it's hard to talk about all these different things that, you know, when you're in the horse business, because nobody ever sits down and really talks about it. No more less talking about who's going to show Saturday or who's going to race Saturday, you know, that type of thing. But it's very important. And the reason I'm kind of giving, you know, roughly giving you all these statistics and everything is to make you realize that, you know, the situation that we're in here, and how important it is. And the reason that we're doing this, you know, this rough brief here, is to let everybody know that everybody is contributing in the horse business to our economy. And so now, you know, we go into talking about safety, like at the Kentucky Derby, they had, you know, several horses break down and had to be put down. Several tracks around the country over the years have done that and everything. So, you know, realizing the importance of the horse industry to our economy brings us around to the safety of the horse and the people that are around it. And there's a new system out called HISA. They're monitor the programs, medications, everything that has to deal with the horses, from the people working on the backside or in the barns, on the farms, you know, at the racetracks. They came together and they said, you know, what can we do to make the horse industry better than it is now? And so it pretty much was decided that we need to have a universal rules package. And a lot, everybody always says, when they say HISA, they say, oh, well, it's about medication. No, it's, HISA is about the whole nine yards. It's about everything that we're doing in the horse industry that needs to be regulated, which it always has been, but it's just a matter of implementing the, you know, the programs. And a lot of people complained about it, you know, that type of thing, and you know, because it was new and something different. And what I like about it is everything is all on one page. You know, actually, it's like a 300-some-odd page regulation book. But the whole point is that we all have the same rules and regulations in Florida as they do in Kentucky, New York, California, anywhere in the U.S. They have to go by the rules and regulations. And I like that, because once you get uniformity and consistency, then you can get your product and your operation more efficient. And that's what it's always about. And that's what we've always talked about here, is getting on that efficient, you know, train and getting your program together. And when you come to the racetrack or to the showgrounds or, you know, to the farms or, you know, wherever you go where the horse operations are at, you go in and it's the same thing. You got people of responsibility that are identifying that you can put your finger on. For example, you've got, you know, a person that's in charge of medication, you know, along with the vet, you know, that type of thing. The people that are in charge of making sure the barn is safe and secure, making sure that the employees are, you know, doing the right thing. It gives you a system to where you can point your finger, you know, if there's something wrong. It gives you like a paper trail. You know, if something happens, we'll say, let's say a horse comes up and tests positive for a medication. Well, if you go through your chart, you know, your paper trail, you'll find out, well, was it the hot walker or the groom? No, it wasn't that. Was it transport people? No, it wasn't that. You know, was it the jockey or the rider? No, it wasn't that. Was it the assistant trainer, the barn manager? Was it the trainer? Was it the vet? You know, and eliminates a lot of things. And that's what I like about, you know, having a program like that. It creates an environment of somewhat of, you know, a protected horse. You're protecting the horse with this system. You're protecting the spectators, the people that watch the racing and the shows. They know that they're getting a good product, if, you know, a fine product. And that's what it's all about in the business, is making sure that you get, you know, the right thing at the right time and you know who's doing what. And not saying that you're looking to point the finger or blaming anybody, but you're just chasing down, you know, what it could possibly be. And that's the main thing, you know, now is safety of the horse. A quality product to the general public, safety for their workers, protecting the investment of the owners. That's one thing I like about Heisen. It protects the owners and the money they invest into the horse, making sure they're getting the right, the right program, the right schedule, the whole nine yards. And back in the Derby, we had with Forte was the favorite for the Derby, and they came out and he was scratched. He was scratched from the Derby. And everyone's, it's probably drugs, probably this. No, the horse had a stone bruise, and the horse, it's like us bruising our foot. You know, every time he put his foot down, there was a little problem, an issue. And previous people raced horses with sore feet, and it's not a good thing to do for the horse or for the public or for the owner. And so that's what, we take a look at things like. And in fact, they're still determining, on some horses what have happened. And Forte, I'll race in the Jim Dandy this weekend, and we'll see just what kind of foot he had. The layoff probably helped him. That's what we're looking at to do these things. And anytime you do anything, you want to see quality. Like say a NASCAR, you want to make sure all the safety things are in place, for NASCAR, not only for the drivers, but the pit crews, the owners of the cars and the fans. And so now that our society is starting to wrap their heads around, the way we live, and we're going back to getting quality. We're going back to getting quality in everything we do. I don't care whether it's horse racing, horse showing, breeding, a restaurant, going to Walmart, you want to get that quality and you want to make sure that the rules and regulations are followed by everybody involved, because then that gives you a great service, quality service, and a great product. And we have to do that to protect our horse industry, which over the past few years, in my opinion, has kind of gone down to the wayside. And what we need to do is we need to get all the people that are cutting corners, trying to, get to the winner's circle, by cutting corners. We want to get those kind of people out of there and you get the real deal people in there. And I'll be honest with you, the Kentucky Derby is the perfect example. And I've been in many of them, involved in many of them in my career. And I tell you what, you got 20 horses starting in that field. And there's a lot of horses that really shouldn't be in that field. They're outclassed. It's just not going to happen. And a lot of people say, well, you can't say that because then you look at a horse like Smart Strike, that they had. A long shot wins. That will happen occasionally, but not all the time. Usually the statistics prove, what horses are there and they, they get out of it. But the whole thing is reality. Back when I first started coming around the track in the early 80s, the Derby was not, there weren't 20 horses. I even know one guy that lived across from me. He had the horse that ran the slowest Derby ever. And he just got in because he had the money. And, he wanted to say he ran in a Derby. And these are the things that we're trying to, get a hold of and make it good. So basically what I've said in this last half hour is that the horses are important. They contribute a lot of economic impact to each state and to the country. Provides jobs. Provides clients for the Burger Kings and the Walmarts and, the banks and the housing industry, so they're very important and really important because of the mass numbers that they have. And that we want to make sure that the products that are going out there, be it a show horse or, race horse or, you know, the breeding industry, what have you. We want to make sure that the horses are safe, the people that are working with the horses are safe, the things are running good and safe on the farms that'll be there. You know, and I'll give you a classic example of where we stand at now in the horse industry, and particularly the thoroughbred industry. We got a lot of owners that are getting upset, you know, about rules and regulations and things that are going on, and some that are going to get out of the business, you know, and some that, you know, that are going to try to, you know, wiggle their way through, you know, the courts to get what they want done and everything. And so I'm involved in a situation of knowing a lot of things. And one of the things that was interesting is training facilities. Training facilities are a unique part of the thoroughbred industry. And everybody says, oh, well, you know, you can train at Gulfstream or Kentucky or Keeneland or Churchill or whatever. Yes, this is true. But there are some training facilities in the United States that exceed the quality of the tracks that are there, such as Gulfstream, Keeneland, Santa Anita, you know, Belmont, and that type of thing. And one in particular facility here in the state of Florida has produced three Kentucky Derby winners, multiple Breeders' Cup winners, multiple world champions, and multiple training titles. And it's just a little bitty old small track. People can't figure that out. But it's the way the system works. It's a quality track. It's a quality track. The people that had taken care of that track were second to none. They could hold their own with anybody or any track in the country. And then all of a sudden you come up and, you know, the property could be released from the people that are that had it. It could switch hands. It could do a lot of things. Or it could just be nothing. It could end up being nothing. You know, that nobody leases it. But it's that economic thing, you know, that we're looking at. And, but it's a quality, safe track. That's like Pompano. Pompano Park, the standard bred track, you know, they were the winter place to be for horses in the wintertime. Had movie stars, had the Yankees, you know, had their spring training camp next to Pompano. And, oh, man, I tell you, you know, it was just a who's who when you went in there. Movie stars, business people, athletes and everything. And it survived for a long time. And then it started going downhill. And it started going downhill. And it was kind of, in my opinion, it was kind of Pompano's management that started going downhill, because it comes to a time and point you got to realize the value of the value of the harness racing in Pompano. Sure, it brought a lot of money to Pompano, you know, with the owners, trainers, and the workers. But then all of a sudden they started looking at the casino. Casinos started getting their way in, wiggling their way in. And so it got to a point to where, you know, management of Pompano went to you know, get a contract with a horseman, and they just couldn't get eye to eye on it. And Pompano knew that, you know, the standard breds were not going to be able to, you know, fork over a lot of money, as they say, you know, for the lease. And so they just made it difficult, and they literally, you know, contracted them, you know, out racing at Pompano. And so, you know, that happens, and that happens with thoroughbred tracks. We're looking at, you know, we're looking up in Northern California, you know, to the racing up there. It's always been good. You know, Golden Gate Fields was a small track and you know, had a good number of people there. But now they're closing that down, and what they're hoping is the people from Golden Gate Fields will go south down to Santa Anita, Del Mar, you know, that type of thing, and strengthen that. There's strength in numbers, and the more horses you have, the better fields that you'll have, and you'll have full fields, which they haven't had a lot in Southern California. over the past few years. You know, that type of thing. Then you look at Kentucky. Kentucky's got three new harness tracks there. They're just going great guns. They got Ellis Park with under new management. They're doing really good. And in fact, when they stopped the Churchill meet because of injuries to horses on the track, they move it to Ellis Park, and Ellis Park is doing really good. You know, so that just goes to show you there's a way to protect our industry if you sit down and, you know, try to figure it out. And so back to the training facilities. Over the years, I've seen a lot of training facilities go down to housing projects, you know, to factories and, you know, things like that. We look at Hollywood Park out in California. It's gone. You know, that was sad to see that go. It was a historical place for a lot of great horses over the years. You know, but the Hollywood Park's gone. You know, now we're looking up at Golden Gate Fields. It's going to be gone. You know, so they're going by the wayside pretty quick. You know, but we got to remember, we got to protect our industry because it's such a big part of our economic impact to wherever there's a horse facility at. The World Equestrian Center in Ocala, it's one of the most beautiful facilities I've ever seen. They've got every kind of thing that you can imagine up there. They've got RVs, they got housing, they've got a church, they've got a grocery store. They're building a lot of shops that they're going to have, little mini equestrian mall type things. They do the same thing in Tryon, North Carolina. It's really nice. Parker, Colorado is nice. Of course, Saratoga is the place to be because all the people that go to Saratoga, they file into Saratoga starting in April, you know, and they're there until, you know, the end of September, 1st of October. And, I mean, it's really great there. The racing's great. And they got harness racing there, too. They got thoroughbreds. You know, they got a little bit of everything there. And so you see all these things happening, like the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington. In the spring, when you have the Kentucky Derby rolling around the first Saturday in May, 2 weeks prior to that, 3 weeks prior to that, the Kentucky Derby, you have racing at Keeneland. You have sales at Keeneland. You have the Kentucky Horse Park where you have three-day eventing, the Rolex three-day event, which is just unbelievable. Like I said, you have a thoroughbred sale there. Then you also have polo. You have some of the best polo in the world being played at Lexington, you know, in the spring. And then you roll around to Saratoga in the summertime, Del Mar, you know, like they say, by the sea, by the sea, by the beautiful sea, Del Mar is the place to be. And that's what's going on now. So, you know, we see all these things that are going on, and they're very important. And then what I like about it is you get all these, you know, you get all these little stories that come along. And since I got off the racetrack, kind of got out into like a my retirement type thing, the stories everybody tells. The story that you worked with a horse that almost won the Kentucky Derby. You know, you almost won the Belmont. You know, almost won the Rolex. You know, all these stories change over the years. You know, and that horse that won the Arlington Million, he went from winning it by half a length to winning it by 5.5 easy. You know, so that's the great thing about, you know, the horse industry. Everybody's got their story to tell. You know, and so what I like about where I'm at now, I'm not young, I'm not old. I'm 66, and I'm involved in some partnerships on horses. And there are many, you know, little micro shares, you know, 1 or 2% type thing. But it's still a thing that's coming into the horse business. And everybody can afford to get into that. You know, that's the type of thing that you're looking at. And that's whether it's thoroughbreds or show horses or standardbreds or, you know, what have you. Everybody's a little part of it. And when you can go to the track as a horse owner it's a whole different ballgame. It's another level. You know, you're in the owner's boxes. You get privileges, and it's really well worth it, you know, and it's really helping, you know, boost the business, the thoroughbred business, the show horse business, you know, the whole nine yards. It's really good. And one of the stories, and I worked for this man for a few years. It's really an interesting little story here. 91-year-old Gottwalds runs pair in stakes at Monmouth. This is really good. This is in the blood horse a few days ago. And it's this weekend that they're running. It wasn't until he was 89 years old that Bill Poppy Gottwalds, the co-founder and patriarch of Brookledge Horse Transportation, which is the best in the United States. They are the best quality, professional people, horsemen, and they've been around a long time. Poppy Gottwalds decided to buy his first horse unaccompanied by a bloodstock agent or a vet, and acting entirely on his own, which all those things right there, you know, are signs that no, don't do that. Get somebody in there to tell you, oh, he looks good. No, he doesn't. You got to have those people around you because it's a business thing, you know. But like I said, Poppy Gottwalds, you know, he's been around a long time. He's got the best, you know, horse transportation company in the country, and now he's got his first horse. He was acting entirely on his own. He went to the 2021 team in November sales and picked out a weanling for $55,000. 5 months later, again acting alone, approaching 90, he picked up another filly, this time for $20,000 at the Ocala Breeders' Spring Sale of 2-year-olds in training. So he went out and he watched the filly train, and he said, hey, I'll get on this one. So Saturday, Mr. Gottwalds will be in attendance at Monmouth Park to watch both his fillies go in separate stake races on a 10-race card. First Joke, a 2-year-old daughter, a practical joke, and first horse that Gottwalds ever purchased, will try to parlay a debut win in a maiden special weight at Delaware Park on June 3rd, which he did. Actually, now they're coming back and they're looking at the Mama folks, you know, or the Delaware folks, and so they're trying to fix which way to go with this horse. And I'm telling you, these two horses are nice little horses that they have out here. And the Mama folks, it's a $250,000 for fillies. Foggy Knight drew post position four with Paco Lopez, trained by Mr. Reed, and the horse is 4-1 and 12 favorites, $250,000, you know, on a $55,000 purchase. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? And if you go to IEMTV.org, you'll be able to watch it live on our featured race. First Joke is at 12-1. Mr. Reed's got him in, and it's $100,000 for Hurrian. It's $100,000 for Philly 2-year-olds that'll be five firm loans on the turf. So now all of a sudden you're looking at a 2-year-old Philly could be a stakes winner, you know, on Saturday evening, and you know, with these two horses. And I'm not saying that he didn't know horses. I mean, he's been around horses all his life and everything. You know, it might work. It just goes to show you that you can have all the experience in the world in the horse business, all the experience in the world. And then you got a guy like this that comes up, picks out two horses, making money with them, going to be stakes winners with them, you know. And you have that happen. You know, you take a guy like D-Wayne Lucas, Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert. You know, they did the same thing that he did. You know, he went out to the sales. He looked at something that caught his eye. You know, he couldn't tell you what it is. And if he didn't know what it was, he wouldn't tell you. you know. And now look at him. He's sitting up there ready to roll with these two horses. And I like that about the horse business. That's one thing I've been telling people for a long time. The horse business can't write a book about it. They're trying. They've tried to write books about it, but there's no one way to do it. I don't care who it is, what it is. There's no one way to do the horse business. That's two horses, standard brands, quarter horses, anything. Because if you could write a book on it, everybody would be writing a book, making a lot of money, and everybody'd be winning. But, you know, there's no room to fall. No room to fall. We'll see how they do Saturday on that at the Monmouth Park. And races, it's the ninth race at Monmouth Park. It's 4:20 Eastern time out there from Foggy Night. In Monmouth Park, it would be the eighth race at 3:51 p.m. out there from first group. And we'll see how they do. Next week, we'll let you know how they do and what happened. Maybe we might call Mr. Dotwells and see how something we could go on with it. But see, having said that, that just goes to show you, you've got to go in and take a chance. It's like playing the lottery. Can't win if you're not in. And there's a certain guideline that, oh yeah, you know, we could do this, and this with the horse, and you know, we got the best trainer, we got the best jockey, you know, we got the best feed, we got the best everything. But when they open that gate, you don't know what's going to happen. The same thing with the show horses and the standard bred. When you enter that show ring, you do not know what's going to happen with these horses. You know, I'm really surprised to see what goes on here Saturday. One of the things that you know, we're always looking for in our business is support groups and things like off the track thoroughbreds. You know, make sure that when they get through racing, they got a place to go, they got a job to do. With the standardbreds and the thoroughbreds, and the things getting to the point now where we've got so many that are, you know, being retired. And to retire, what do you do with them? You know, I've seen a lot of horses get retired, you know, and they go out to the farm. That's a nice one. You got to do is take a draft. You know, take it easy. And that's not the case. A lot of them get really bored, you know, out in the field because they're used to training. They're used to being around people every day. And so, off-track thoroughbreds, you know, and a lot of the different associations are learning them at the show horse. And some of the dressage horses that are getting really good now are standard breeds. We've got good turning foot. We've got good speed between the fences. Dressage are really good at because they just float across. They just float across the surface. You know, the thoroughbreds are doing good. They're becoming good jumpers, and some of these show horses 8, 9, 10, 12 years old. So it gives them a purpose in life. And so we get a lot of people that are, you know, helping out create these programs for them. And then one of the other charities or, you know, organizations that are out there. It's we have the on July 29th. This will be a good draw for people. We have jockeys contribute to the National Disability Day, July 29th. Racetrack set to participate in the promotions include both Saratoga and Del Mar. So we got two of the best tracks in the country with two of the best racing programs on. Slate for Saturday the 29th. They're going to have these. Tell you all about it. Now, the Jockeys Guild and Permanently Disabled Jockey Farm, the PDJF, in conjunction with racetracks across America and across the United States, will be Saturday, July 29th. It's unbelievable what they'll be doing. They're going to pay tribute to the National Disability Independence Day and raise awareness in the funds for the PDJF. three tracks and jockey colonies that participated in the promotion include both Saratoga and Del Mar. Many tracks will host activities on Saturday. Although some of these tracks we did not race on that day will participate on other days. Fans should check the local listings the racetracks that are participating in this and for the exact date and events that they have. And throughout the day, fans of the industry and participants will be encouraged to contribute to the PBJF organization. It's a 501c3 public charity that provides financial assistance to approximately 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on track injury. Jockeys expect to participate in these various activities of the sport and PDJF while wearing armbands and ribbons saluting the National Disability Independence Day, which marks the 33rd anniversary of this passing of the American Disabilities Act, passed by Congress in 1990, signed into law by President H.W. Bush and the ADA Ban Discrimination Disability in all parts of the public life while improving the quality of life and measuring millions of disabilities. So you get there and you'll get to see all the things that they're doing there at the track. And, you know, that's one of the things that, that I've failed to mention here over the past couple of years is the strong union that we have in the horse industry for medical attention and you know, housing and food and education on the racetrack and in the horse industry. For a long time, the people, and still pretty much today, there's a lot of trainers and farms out there that aren't paying their people very much money, you know, to work. It's minimum wage, you know, for a lot of them. That's hard to live on minimum wage, you know, in this country today. But the industry as a whole has done pretty good. I know they've helped me a lot with my cancer. It's been great, you know, to have them around. But what they do is they make sure that the people are getting medical care, eye care, dental care. They're making sure that they have food available, clothing available. They take care of them on the farms and the racetracks, you know, and especially the jockeys, you know, that have been paralyzed and, you know, permanently disabled, you know, through our industry. And again, it goes back to showing that, you know, it's very important to take care of these people because they're important to our economy as a whole throughout the country. And you know, we've got to take care of the horses that got us to the Derby, to the Preakness, to the Belmont, to the Breeders' Cup, to the you know, to the world, all the world class horse shows, the Olympics, you know, that type. You know, that's what it's all about, is a community. And you know, I keep going back. We're going to talk about this a little bit more this week. But the high thing, I'll tell you what it is and what it stands for. They got some things that are going on now that are changing. It's going to be, you know, good for the horse industry. But what it does, is like we did here at the Florida, you got to have an organized plan. You got to have a daily schedule, a rigorous day struggle. Every day struggle, every day. You know, it's tough. It's tough. You got to start getting up at the same time, be consistent, you know, do everything, check all your boxes on, make sure you check everything. Everything's done, you know, and you do that. That's what we're trying to do. And that's what I like about Heisen. He's brought all the rules and regulations together, transportation, medical, ownership transfer, how to run your business, you know, taxes, everything. They got everything. It's all in one book now. And so if you go to that book, you've got all your questions answered that you might have. So, you know, it's a tough business. Life is tough in itself. Now I've really got y'all screwed up for my talk of the day. If you're listening to me, buddy, you're in trouble. That's for sure. But at the end of the day, I got a smile on my face. I'm doing good, you know, and I look forward to tomorrow, to the racing tomorrow. You know, like Forte, the favorite of the Derby. What a story that is. You know, he came through. He was far the best horse of all the three-year-olds going into the Derby. And like we were saying before, you never can tell what's going to happen, you know, in the horse business, be it show horses, race horses, you know, whatever. You know, the weather was good. He was doing good. He was winning races on top of the heat, as they say. And then it comes up and he gets a stone bruise. He had some medical violation issues at one time. You know, he's had the whole nine yards. And so everybody got mad because he got scratched out of the Derby, which knocked him out of the Preakness. And so now he's coming back for the field in the Jim Dandy up at Saratoga. And that's going to really be an interesting race. I mean, nobody wants to run against all the best ones, so we ended up with a five-horse field. And a lot of these horses were Derby horses. We got the Hit Show. He's going to make a good deal. Grant Cox has got three in there. He's got Saudi Crown, Angel of Empire, Forte, which is Fletcher's horse, and Disarm, which is Steve Ashby's. And all at one time, during the pre-Derby and off the stomach so far, these horses have made a statement on who they are and what they are and where they're going. And, you know, back all winter long, a lot of these horses had to deal with weather-related issues, injuries, everything. So this is kind of like we're going to see if Forte is going to be the horse that he looked like he was going to be earlier in the year. And then we're going to see if any of these horses got a little older and got a little better. And here it is, July 29th, a month from now, we're going to be looking at the Travers, which is, they call it the Summer Derby, Summer Derby for thoroughbreds. So that's really a big one. And the reason I'm telling you about these races here, these are races that stamp your horse, whether he's going to be a stallion, a good stallion, or not a good stallion. It's about where you race. There's a lot of horses that won the Derby that never became good stallions. There's a lot of horses that ran second, third, fourth, and became great stallions. They didn't run in the Derby. They didn't run in it. So this week is going to be interesting to see what we do here. It's IENTV.org. We'll have those races live. We got racing live from Saratoga today on there. It's racing now. But, you know, this is what it's all about. It's all about, you know, being organized. It's all about giving a good product, no matter what breed or, you know, what you're doing. I rambled on enough, you know, but you kind of get the point. Get organized, enjoy your day, start off every day on an organized level, have all your projects written down, and then that way at the end of the day, you can say, oh, man, why did I do this? When did I do this? You can see where you failed or where you succeeded. And it's all about organization and, you know, the horse industry is in a good position. Just remember, horse people out there are supporting us in every state in this country. So we'll listen. I'll have you listen next week on Friday. What is next Friday, doggone? We gotta get up there. That's the fourth, I believe, isn't it? So get on my list there. Friday the fourth. Next week, I promise you, I'll have video on this. I'm going to blow your mind. Thanks for joining us on the International Week.